What's up? Welcome back to another episode of 200 and Counting. I'm your host, Tia Hill, and boy, do I have an episode for you. Woo-hoo-hoo. So if you live in the United States, which according to my analytics, 81% of you do, then you know that we've got an election coming up on November 3rd. And this episode of the podcast is going to be the last episode leading up to that election. So of course, I had to do it on a documentary that was political and more importantly, had to do directly with elections, specifically the 2016 presidential election and how Russia interfered with that election, and it's called Agents of Chaos.
In 2016, our sovereignty was violated by a foreign power which found a way to interfere in our democratic process. We faced an attack of a new kind. The Russians hacked democracy.
Now, this documentary, Wow. It is a must see ahead of this election. Like, you need to watch this. I'm warning you now, it is depressing. I did get emotional at the end, but at this point in the election cycle, I'm holding on by a thread anyway, so it's just kind of like whatever. But seriously, I know I've said this about documentaries before, but besides 13th, this is the most essential viewing I have ever viewed. I'm going to try to do my best to summarize it, but just know this is a two-part documentary. Each part is damn near 2 hours, so it is a lot of information, and I'm not even including I'm not even rushing the surface of the details of this doc. I'm just trying to do my best with giving you all like a good solid overview. Now, if you can remember in 2016, there was a lot going on. There's a lot going on. If you remember the news cycle during that time, both in 2016 and in 2015, it was like absolutely bonkers. Bonkers. It was crazy. You had Trump spewing wildly racist, sexist, Islamophobic nonsense just constantly.
They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people.
Radical Islamic terrorists. She won't even mention the word.
And then on Clinton's side, you had all this news about her emails. That was all anyone was talking about.
Clinton campaign calls this a crime reminiscent of Watergate, but worse, more than 1,900 emails released just this week. We are talking about a slow leak every day, a new batch.
And not only that, but social media during this election was like a toxic wasteland of opinions and content and information and news. And what was crazy was at the time, it felt like MAGA people, Bernie supporters, Clinton supporters, whoever the hell else, everyone was just constantly clashing and everyone had issues with one another. And it was just so, so toxic. And obviously, this all manifested on election night when Donald Trump won. And none of us expected that to happen. I know I was very, very shocked. But eventually it came out that Russia played a huge role in the outcome of that election because of how the Russian government was able to use misinformation to manipulate the American public. But also there was an even larger web of lies surrounding Russia and that country's involvement in the presidential election and specifically in the Trump campaign.
The FBI director told Congress he is investigating whether the Trump campaign colluded with Russia to sway the election.
I've talked about a similar topic in The Great Hack where basically, you know, the point of that documentary was that Facebook played a huge role in presenting to people propaganda and misinformation about the election, which in turn informed how people voted. The difference here, though, is that in this documentary, we get cold, hard evidence of, hey, actually, Russia had a calculated plan to spread misinformation throughout the country. It wasn't just computer generated. It wasn't just people being in their little information bubbles. It was fed to them. But also, the point of this documentary is that it wasn't just Facebook ads. It wasn't just one social platform. It was Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. It was like the vibe, and all of that ended up bleeding into real life as well. It was way more than just misinformation on social media, and it was more than just collusion, even though throughout the documentary, they say they don't like using that word, but it was more than that. You know, it was more than cooperation from Trump's camp with Russian officials. It was more than just WikiLeaks releasing Hillary Clinton's emails. It was several things all together that created an environment that was right to swing an election. And it's complicated because there's so many moving parts to this conspiracy or whatever you want to call it. But I'm going to try to break it down because like I said, the documentary is split into parts. Part one, I'd say, focuses more on the social media aspect of things, the media, the news, who is pushing misinformation and looking at it from Russia's side. And part two focuses more on the inner workings of the Trump campaign, but also on the FBI investigations into different parts of the campaign and also about the mechanics of the election itself. Honestly, after part one, I was already spiraling and then I had to watch part two after the first presidential debate. So you can imagine I was hot. So to start off, there is this huge question of like why Russia and why Vladimir Putin, who is the president of Russia, would even be interested in skewing the US election. Obviously, the United States is a major world power, and it's one of the biggest players in the world when it comes to politics and everything, and, you know, foreign policy. And so for Vladimir Putin, who controls Russian elections and he controls the media in Russia, U.S. democracy was something that he kind of wanted to take down and have people lose faith in. They talk about how when your country doesn't really have strong domestic policy, you have to latch on to having stronger foreign policy in order to kind of trick people into thinking that you're doing something. So essentially, you have to make up an enemy for yourself in order to keep people going with the facade that you're putting on that is the government. Because think about it, otherwise they're going to start focusing on like, well, why is everything here fucked up? But if you direct the attention to, hey, look over there, look what they're doing, that's so crazy, there are enemies, they're horrible, they're bad, then that kind of misdirects people's energy and attention to this external force, this external issue. They talk about how Hillary Clinton, while she was Secretary of State under Obama, condemned a lot of Putin's actions in Crimea and in Ukraine at the time because he was, you know, trying to like overreach his power, to control their government, control their elections, and to make decisions for their people.
There's growing tensions with Russia and a massive show of military might this morning, similar to the Soviet days. A huge military parade as President Vladimir Putin arrives in Crimea weeks after it became part of Russia again.
And so while Clinton was in office under Obama, she was very, very open about how much she did not like Putin's actions and what it was that he was doing. And Putin was really open about the fact that he did not like Hillary Clinton.
Russian President Vladimir Putin this morning is calling Hillary Clinton weak and ungraceful. French reporters asked him about the former Secretary of State. In March, Clinton compared Russia's takeover of Crimea to Adolf Hitler's expansion of Germany.
Russian and U.S. relations were not really, really good. But then comes Donald Trump. And Trump, throughout his campaign, always says really, really good things about Putin. Like, it's weird. Like, any chance he got, he would say something like pretty favorable about Vladimir Putin on the campaign trail. He wasn't even president yet, and he's just like flowering him with compliments.
Donald Trump is gushing again over Vladimir Putin.
If he says great things about me, I'm going to say great things about him.
Trump believes Putin called him brilliant a few months ago. Putin later said he only called Trump bright.
But the question was, what stake would Trump have had in colluding with Russia? You know what I mean? Like, why would he even be interested? Well, at a certain point, they talk about how they wanted to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. And Trump was in a position where no matter what happened with this election, no matter whether or not he won the presidency, he would still make a ton of money. So it was kind of a win-win situation for him. There was something really, really powerful to me that someone said in the documentary, which was they said, did Trump call Russia and say, hey, I need help? He didn't have to because Russia was there for him. They spend a lot of time explaining to you towards the end, just because there's not a piece of paper that literally maps out everything that happened doesn't mean that it didn't happen. Obviously, at no point was anybody just going to march on over to Russia and say, hey, can you help us win this election? And at no point was Russia just going to come to Trump and say, hey, want us to help you win the election? But if you look at all of the different things that were put together, that is very, very clearly what happened. And so it's important to keep that in mind when you think, oh, this sounds too crazy to be true. It's like, well, there's no version of this story in which it's going to be written out so clearly for you that it looks true and like a perfect story or piece of information. Now, one of the most interesting parts to me was that Russia had established what they called a troll factory, a literal troll factory, which was literally a building where a bunch of people sat making memes about the election. And you've seen these memes. We've talked about these memes in episodes like The Great Hack. What their job was to do was to make these memes palatable to people on both sides.
It was during the Russian-backed rebellion in Ukraine in 2014 that evidence first emerged of pro-Kremlin troll factories.
It's so sophisticated and adapted for the tastes of internet users that it's almost impossible to recognize. But this is paid propaganda to brainwash and to make people believe all the lies spread by the Kremlin.
Now, what's even more interesting than them making memes is the fact that they started doing research, just background research, in 2014, trying to look into what America was like, and more specifically, what our pain points were as a nation. Because if you think about it, in 2014, Ferguson happened in 2014, like a lot of stuff was going on, and we were at a point as a nation where things seem to be oh so perfect. But these people, in doing their research, went to certain American cities and certain states to gather information about what it was that Americans liked, what news websites we liked to read, how we engaged online, different things like that. The way it worked was someone would create an assignment, and you know, then you had people who were running fake Twitter accounts. And so a fake Twitter account might have a big following, and that's what they're using to like move information around. They might create a fake blog post saying, you know, this thing is happening. fake Twitter account pick up that blog post, tweet it, add a little blurb. A bunch of people on Twitter engage with that. And then major news sources pick up those tweets and then they write stories about it. I remember around that time, like listicles were really, really big. And it was like a really big thing for sites to just pull people's tweets without any context. And they were using these tweets as sources for stories. I feel like I have a pretty good grasp of when people are just joking, when things are fake, but a lot of people don't. And a lot of people take things at face value because that is what is written. And that was happening a lot. And so Russia knew this and they could create fake accounts on Twitter and just go with it.
They took real fissures in American society and they expanded them to the nth degree.
They, we now know, were Russians.
They also created fake websites on Facebook that looked like they were for legitimate social organizations, and they actually were not. One thing that is really important that they point out is that their goal was not just to spread right-wing propaganda, because that would be too obvious. Their goal was to start chaos and to spread distrust and just turn everything into a shit show, which they succeeded in. If you tell people from both sides to go out and fight for this thing, if you're spreading misinformation to both groups of people, then you're going to have the result that you want, which is destabilization. It's not necessarily for one side to win. It's just that you want to disrupt American democracy enough that people start to lose faith in it. One example of this that they talk about in the documentary is that a DNC worker was killed in a botched robbery in DC. Somehow that story spiraled out of control and a random Russian Twitter account like started this lie that Clinton had hired hitmen to kill this DNC worker, DNC being Democratic National Convention, so that, you know, Bernie wouldn't get the nomination. Some crazy shit like that. More people picked it up on Twitter. Random blogs were writing about it. Then real people, real Americans were taking this information and running with it. Roger Stone, who we learned about on the episode, Get Me Roger Stone, he took this and ran with it and tweeted about it and was talking about it. And so that's how those little things were just kind of stirred up by these Russian bots and then disseminated into the public.
The conspiracy theories began soon after 27-year-old Seth Rich was shot and killed near his Washington, D.C. group house last July. 12 days later, WikiLeaks published embarrassing DNC emails. And 2 weeks after that, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange offered a reward for information about Rich's death.
You really, really, really need to double check every single story. It is really unfortunate that we're living in an era where everything is fake news, both on our side and on their side. Everything seems to be fake news, this, like, you can't trust it, that, blah, blah, blah. But you really, really need to be looking at the sources of things. Do not retweet something. I don't care if it's a screenshot of something. I don't care what it is. Don't retweet something if you have not looked for yourself to make sure that it's real. People don't have time to think about, is this real? What does this mean if it were real? What's happening? The point is just that you get in people's heads, you stir people up into a frenzy, and is going to upset people on both sides of the aisle to see something like that. We've talked basically about the Russian troll factory, which was the thing that affected us on social media the most. But the really, really complicated part has to do with the Trump campaign and their specific conversations with Russia, their specific relationships with Russian government officials and Russian businessmen, and how that was illegal and how that all unfolded. A lot of times we see in the news things about, collusion. What is that? Nobody knows what that is. We hear buzzwords all the time and we never look into it. Like, what? As I understood it, before I watched this documentary, I thought, okay, the Trump campaign met with Russian officials, Russia hacked the election, they just talked about it straight up. It's so much more than that. And I'm going to really try and break it down. There are multiple members of Trump's campaign who are allegedly involved with Russian actors, whether that's businessmen or government officials. And now remember, Trump can make money off of this election no matter what, whether he wins or not. And so what he's doing over the course of him being on the campaign trail, as I said, he's dropping all these hints to Putin because he doesn't need to talk to Putin directly and say, can you help me? He's going out in public and he's saying, I think Putin's a great guy. I love Putin. I think he's great.
If Putin likes Donald Trump, I consider that an asset, not a liability.
And he's sending out all these not so subtle signals on the campaign trail to the Russian government to say, hey, I'm with you. I see you. And I like this. At the same time of this election, this company, this just investigation company, who they interview in the documentary, is hired to investigate Trump. And they're hired on behalf of another Republican candidate, presumably Marco Rubio, who, you know, is a loser. They wanted a more moderate Republican to be on the ticket, using moderate as a very, very loose term here. But in this case, it just means someone who's not totally off the damn wall. They wanted someone more moderate to get the nomination. So Marco Rubio's camp started looking into Donald Trump just to see what they could see. Because if you think about it, Trump was not doing as well as he's doing now until 2016. At first, it was just like, this is a joke. But you know, Marco Rubio did not win. He did not get the nomination. But over the course of the investigation, they found out that Russia supposedly had a tape of Trump watching two sex workers pee on a bed in a hotel where Barack Obama had once slept. And that is why Trump was so easily swayed by Russia.
Mr. Trump, according to this story, was staying at the Moscow Ritz-Carlton and asked prostitutes to perform a golden shower urination show on the bed where President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama had slept. The possibility of a videotape was raised, but nothing ever turned up there. Even Steele says the veracity of this part is probably iffy.
We're not even going to get into that, the whole pee tape thing. I really did not understand what it was at the time. And that's another thing. It just like primes you to like, I know that it existed. I did not look into it. I heard pee and tape and I was like, no, it feels racist. I did not know that it was a bed Barack Obama had once slept in or something. I was like, I don't like that weird racial energy there. I don't know. I obviously have not seen this tape. I don't know what the deal is, but this is what they allegedly had access to. And it eventually came out in the news. The company that does these investigations is not necessarily there for one side or the other. Their job is literally just to investigate. They just work with whoever the client is. They do what they need to do and they get out of there. That same company also investigated Paul Manafort, who ended up being an advisor on the Trump campaign. And also, I mentioned him briefly in the Get Me Roger Stone episode because he worked with Roger Stone and the two of them had made a fortune along with their other business partners working and consulting with foreign dictators on how to win elections, getting them in contact with US politicians, doing all kinds of shady shit. And right before he got on the Trump campaign, Paul Manafort had been working with the pro-Russian Ukrainian president.
Manafort most notably advised Ukrainian candidate Viktor Yanukovych through a series of presidential elections. At the time, Yanukovych was considered a controversial figure due to his close ties to Russia and endorsement by Russian leader Vladimir Putin.
So he had a huge stake in Russia because he also wanted to signal to the Russians, hey, I have access to the presidential candidate, because he was in this weird situation bind. He was like on the run from this other like major player in Russia. And it was this whole complicated thing. So he had his personal reasons and connections to Russia. He's involved in the Trump campaign. There's all these other random members of the Trump campaign who were like allegedly involved with Russia. Someone named Carter Page, he did something.
That dossier said that Carter Page, when he went to Moscow, met with officials from the Russian government and from Rosneft, the state-owned oil company. Carter Page has largely denied it in his public appearances over the last few months.
This guy named George Papadopoulos, he said by accident, I guess, he's like, yeah, Russia's helping us with the campaign. And they were like, what? And then eventually they told someone else that. It was messy, 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 messy. There were members of the campaign, including Donald Trump Jr. and Jared Kushner, literally meeting with Russians to hear about what information they had on Hillary Clinton, to hear about what they could do for them, and to hear about these emails, which we all heard so much about throughout this election cycle.
People started using personal accounts. Some say to just because the government computers were so slow. Some say because you could put a bigger attachment on Gmail, whatever.
And the email thing was kind of a distraction. You know, eventually a batch of emails, which were emails that hackers had gotten into like Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party's and her campaign's emails, and they sent them to WikiLeaks, and WikiLeaks had released these emails. These emails were supplied to WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. He thought that they were being supplied by an anonymous Eastern European hacker who turned out to actually be the Russian military intelligence agency GRU. So Russia was feeding emails to WikiLeaks to put out to be like, hey, look what we found. WikiLeaks is doing this thinking that they're doing something to help people, when in reality, this is just like distracting everybody from what's really, really, really going on. And at the same time as all of this other stuff, someone in the Trump campaign, whose name I do not remember because at this point, everybody was just like moving funny, but someone in the Trump campaign is sharing polling data with the Russians on a regular basis.
Lawyers for Paul Manafort accidentally revealed in a court filing today that the special counsel has evidence Manafort shared polling data with an associate linked to Russian intelligence during the 2016 campaign.
And not just any polling data. This is polling data on swing states. So states like Michigan, states like Florida, Ohio, that could swing Democrat or Republican, which means that there are a lot of people in those states that could be convinced one way or another. That is who they're sending polling information about to the Russians, who presumably were then using this information to make more memes to then spread on social media to convince these people who are in swing states to vote or not to vote. They had campaigns to convince Black voters not to vote at all. And so they were out here trying to convince us not to because of social media. It was just a whole thing. thing. And that is really just a light summary. I feel like I've barely even touched the tip of the iceberg because there were so many minute details in this film that I cannot even begin to explain. But just know that every minute of it counts. Every minute of it, because they dug up quite literally every small detail from this Russia investigation, from this Trump campaign, every single thing. It's in this doc. Now, one thing that they spent some time in part two talking about that I thought was really, really interesting was the FBI involvement in this election. They mentioned how the FBI played a big role in helping Donald Trump win, not on purpose, but in how they were moving and how they released information. The FBI had to investigate these emails because they found out early on that Russia had access to, you know, the DNC's email servers and whatever. So they were like, you know, we really need to be checking up on this to make sure nobody said anything crazy, you know? But then all these emails came out where Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was the former chair of the DNC, had said something about how she didn't want Bernie to get the nomination, which is really, really, really fucked up. Also, I just always think it's crazy when people get in trouble for things that they put in their emails. And I'm like, any fucked up thing that I ever say to someone, I'm not putting it in my email. Like, my email is not seeing all of that. No. Absolutely not. So that came out, and then that really stirred people up, even on the left, because that had Bernie supporters kind of like, okay, well, this shit's rigged. Had people just kind of looking at him sideways and really helped with Trump's assertion that everything was rigged. But the FBI investigated the first round of emails, and then they closed that investigation over the summer. And then FBI Director James Comey, who fucked this up for everyone, announced that they were reopening this investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails like 11 days before the election, which he was not supposed to do. In the last month before the election, the grab him by the pussy thing came out. This was after the WikiLeaks emails were released. And so this is all happening. And then he's like, hey, we're going to reopen this investigation.
With just 10 days to go until the election, yet another controversy. On Friday, FBI Director James Comey sent a letter to select congressional leaders announcing that the criminal investigation into Hillary Clinton's private email server has been reopened.
The reason why they reopened that investigation? Because of fucking Anthony Weiner, who I also did an episode of this podcast on, who had been sexting people and who had been doing all sorts of things he was not supposed to be doing on his computer, and his wife, Huma, worked for Hillary Clinton.
There's been an allegation that he was engaged in some improper texting with an underage girl. The FBI has been looking into that, and we're told that that is where this device surfaced. And in looking at that device, some emails were discovered, and now the FBI wants to look and see whether they have any bearing on the investigation of the Hillary Clinton use of a private email server.
And the gag is, the FBI didn't even find anything important. But because Comey had already opened his mouth and said, hey, we're doing an investigation, we're looking into our emails. Unfortunately, at this point in politics, what we have to understand is it doesn't matter what was found. It doesn't matter if everything is fine, because most people are not going to do the research and do the digging into what actually happened. When you're giving people information and you're not necessarily saying something straight up, you're just kind of putting the thought into their head that can prime someone to think about something else. Which is why when you're interviewing people, when you're asking someone questions, when you're reporting on things, you have to be really, really careful about what information you offer to the public, because that can kind of put something into someone's head that may not need to be there. Because Comey announced that they were doing this investigation so close to the election, a lot of people felt that this is what skewed the election and really, really had a big impact on Hillary Clinton eventually losing. And what was really wild was that they noted that everyone pretty much assumed that Hillary Clinton was going to win. I mean, I did. But because everyone assumed that, the FBI assumed that, you know, the Obama administration assumed that. Hell, even Trump's people, even Russia at some points assumed that. Nobody did their due diligence because they just assumed it was fine. So Comey broke the rules and announced they were doing that investigation because he thought, oh, it's no big deal. I'm doing what I need to be doing. She's about to win anyway. I'm just doing this to look out. Barack Obama didn't push back on Russia when the administration first found out about the interference because they assumed, well, Hillary's going to win anyway. She'll take care of it. They didn't do as much because they didn't want to create a situation and escalate it because they didn't know how serious this was going to be. Now, around this time in the election cycle, we started to see Trump planting a lot of seeds of distrust in the general public when it came to the actual election. He kept coming out and saying it was going to be rigged.
She's protected by a rigged system. She shouldn't even be allowed to run for president, I'll tell you right now.
He kept talking about how he may not accept the results of the election.
I will look at it at the time. I'm not looking at anything now. I'll look at it at the time.
Which is especially scary because he's been saying the same shit right now. Once again, this primes people to think, if this actually does not go the way I want it to go, maybe this is rigged. Maybe this is fake. All this other stuff is fake news. I think one of the biggest problems with US politics that we're having right now is that there's no universal truth. There are no basic facts that we can all agree on because one side thinks this is fake, the other side thinks this is fake. Because no one's actually going to believe, even if there's no interference, no one's going to believe that that was done fairly or that any of it is really true. And as kind of the final nail in the coffin, in terms of the actual election, Russia needed a way to, you know, have a concrete impact on the actual votes. And they talk about how Russia couldn't just go in there and like change people's votes or do something crazy like that because that'd be too obvious. So what they ended up doing was hacking into the voter registration databases and corrupting some, not all, of the information. And that did just enough to plant seeds of doubt into people's minds. You know, there were all these layers to Russian involvement in the 2016 election. And it was really, really wild to watch all of this. And it was really, really interesting because it just broke down every single aspect of it. The documentary ends with all of this B-roll from today. They talk about coronavirus, which I was like, okay, I don't know how I feel about that. Watching this documentary, it felt like I was watching it after the 2020 election. That's how solid it was. So I didn't mind that they added some more recent footage. It was very, 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 very unsettling and very depressing. And I literally felt sick watching it because they had this really powerful montage of all of these clips from recent protests and the coronavirus with America the Beautiful playing underneath. It was dark, man. Like, oh Lord, if you are worried about this election, actually, maybe don't watch this. But wow, it was really powerful. They didn't end it with a question. They didn't end it with something like, so what are we gonna do now, guys? Vote, like some cheap ending, you know? It worked and it was a very, very solemn look at everything. And it felt like they just laid all of this information down on the table and they were like, hey, do with that what you will. This is some journalism, okay? This was some journalism. They talked to everyone. People could actually provide some real and substantial insight into how the election unfurled and what's happening even more recently as well. I think it's really important to note that while Russia did meddle in our elections, while there is some evidence of collusion, whatever you want to call it, you know, people were helping people, there were all these conspiracy theories. It's important for us to remember that America is also guilty in this, you know, like Americans elected this man, not me. He's not my president, but somebody did. You know what I mean? People did go out there and vote for him. It wasn't that America is this perfectly pure nation and then this evil force came from overseas and then elected this man. Because we like to, not we, I'm talking in we, I had nothing to do with this man and nobody I know did either. But, you know, Americans like to distance themselves from the idea that we could be doing anything wrong. When in reality, it's like things that helped Trump win have to do with like the society in the US, the things that we pay attention to, what we find funny, what we find entertaining. That's what got the man elected. This just helped. This gave it a boost. This helped it go from a fringe, you know, out there possibility to something that could really happen and has really affected all of our lives. My only other note or critique of this, I guess I would say, besides the fact that they didn't talk about like literally the rampant racism, they did. They talked about like tearing things apart that were already in our society. And obviously it was just about Russia. So they didn't have time to go into like, okay, well, some people are actually racist, you know, but just something to note. While I really enjoyed it, I thought it was super in-depth. It was also super complicated. Like this story is so complicated. I just told you all this information and I didn't even scratch the surface because there's so much there. I didn't find it super accessible to people. I think that if you like politics and you're into following the news, you'll eat this up. You'll watch this 4 hours, almost 5 hours, no problem. But if you're not super into politics and you're trying to get into it, or if you're just trying to learn for the first time, this isn't the easiest documentary to watch because it's so complicated. It's fun. It does break it down. And I'm not 100% sure how to make things more accessible in that way. But I think that going into it, the documentary kind of assumes that you know a bunch of things. And then it's like, all right, you got me. And then they dive deep. So I could see people who aren't super, super into politics watching this and kind of being like, okay, they're doing a lot. And what's going on. Overall, obviously, I'm giving this 5 stars. Hands down, absolutely, this is getting 5 stars. You should really, really watch this documentary. I know we're all sad about the election, but you should really, really watch this. If you're not super, super into politics, it's still really good to watch because they really take the time to break everything down. There's like a lot of really cool graphics and charts, and it was just really, really entertaining. This covers everything. It gives you so much information just nicely wrapped up into a little package. It's a bit disturbing when you think about, you know, they did this whole documentary about how the 2016 election was skewed and now we have 2020. But, you know, like I said, 5 stars, definitely give it a watch. And more importantly, please, if you are able to, go out and vote on election day and understand that voting alone is not going to save us. It takes more than that. It takes organizing. It takes, you know, getting together with your community. It takes demonstrating and doing so much more. But one of the first steps for people is to vote. So make sure that you're using your voice. You're doing what you can to support other people in your community and make sure that you're fact checking all of your sources. If you're listening before election day, stay safe. If you're listening after election day, would love to know what the world is looking like because we are in for quite a wild ride. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of 200 and Counting, and I will see you next time.